At Midway USA, we know the AR-15 is one of the most popular rifles in modern American history. Known for its modularity and widespread use, it's often considered essential to any gun collection. The essential things you need to run an AR-15 are usually always in stock during shortages, things like magazines and 5.56 ammo. Whether you're looking to buy a new AR-15 or buy parts for your modern sporting rifle, log on and for just about everything for the outdoors, shop MidwayUSA.com. Midway USA brand product designers have one straightforward goal: develop high-quality, technically sound products and deliver them to customers at reasonable prices. If you are immersed in the shooting sports industry and pay close attention to every single detail, you know our products are built right and stand up to everyday use. Who has shooting mats and range bag systems to hunting clothing and just about everything for the outdoors? Log on and shop 24/7 with super fast shipping. MidwayUSA.com.
Join Justin Townsend and the Harvesting Nature crew as they explore the world of cooking wild fish and game while sharing recipes, tips, tricks, and lessons learned from their pursuit of wild food. We sure hope you ate before the show, because you're going to leave hungry. This is the Wild Fish and Game Podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Harvesting Nature's Wild Fish and Game Podcast. You got your host here, Justin Townsend, and I'm excited. Today we have a special guest, and John actually reached out to us with a proposed topic, and really, really excited that he reached out, because it's been a topic that I've wanted to talk about for a while, and that is having to do with shot placement to save meat. And, you know, as hunters who are always trying to find better ways to be more productive and bring home more meat, I think this is a very, very, very relevant topic. So I'm excited to chat about that today. And we're going to go into it a little more. We're going to talk about the shot placement. We're going to talk about ammo. We're going to go through some, I'm sure, some scenarios and really pick John's brain about the whole thing. So excited for that. But first, I'm going to give you guys a quick update on kind of what's been going on, because it's been a little while since we recorded the last podcast that we released, excluding an Adventures for Food, was with our pig camp, which I'm happy to say we've rescheduled another one in December. So December 8th through the 11th, that one's live up on the website. You can sign up for that and come join us down in Texas for a four-night, three-day camp and do the whole, like, shooting, hunting, butchering, processing, cooking experience with wild pigs down in Texas. Super fun. We had nine folks join us last time. If you roll back two podcast episodes from this one, you'll be able to listen to that and get their full perspective and the full experience. We did a live podcast there, so really dive into a lot of the details. So I'll save you from that. Listen to it if you get a chance. It was great overall experience. In addition to that, we're finalizing our fly fishing camp, which should be released. It should be released as you're listening to this podcast, and that's going to be at the end of July up in Missoula, Montana. So kind of same concept, very food focused, but looking more towards like learning how to cast a fly, learning how to fly fish, tenkara rods. Rod and reel, get out on the river, identifying fish species. We're going to talk conservation. We're going to teach some fly tying, all these great things up there in Montana. Staying at the beautiful Teller Wildlife Reserve, which is a great place there. We've got a couple houses rented on their property and a really unique spot to be able to fish. Not everybody gets access to it, so that's a cool thing too. And then working on our summer issue for our magazine, so that'll be out first week in July. And prior to that, our spring issue is still available, so it's available electronic or print on demand. You can hop in on our website and access that pretty easily. It's right there on the homepage if you want to subscribe and flip through those pages. So real inexpensive, $10 for a subscription, or $5 if you want to subscribe just to, or I guess purchase one individual issue. And then in addition to that, you can get the print on demand, which is about $20 if you want to have it living on the coffee table or flip through it or show your friends, any of that stuff. Super cool magazine. Excited for the summer one. Very fish focused, some foraging, some spear fishing, lots of cool stuff. We were just working on the lineup last night. So I'm excited to see that come into fruition. And then me, myself, my last bit of news is since we last recorded a live show here out of Denver, I was up at the BHA Rendezvous up in Missoula, Montana. Had a blast, cooked the field to table dinner, cooked up a delicious wild pork green chili with some of the pig from down in Texas, served that up. Everybody enjoyed it. Was really great experience. Did the cooking competition with Adam Steele. We represented the Armed Forces Initiative of BHA and took third place. So we're back-to-back bronze champions, third place 2 years in a row. But it was a great experience. John, you may appreciate this. So we cooked SOS, shit on a shingle, with some antelope. And then we made this stew called Slim Gillian Stew, which is like a World War I trench stew. And we put rattlesnake, rabbit, diver duck pepperoni, and snipe in it and served that up. It was just like a real like smorgasbord of meats in that stew. But it was fun.
Well, if you guys won third place for that, sounds like it was better than the SOS a lot of us are used to having over the years then.
Yes, it is. It is. It was pretty good. I actually used, so back probably 2 years ago, I wrote the recipe, an SOS recipe for Meat Eater, and used that recipe as the basis for our entry into that. So pretty good stuff. So super excited. It's always fun, and you get to interact at the rendezvous with like-minded folks, which is good. Which is good. Just be there in the moment. So cool. Well, I think that's all I got. Let me read your intro here. So our guest grew up in East Texas, hunting with his father and grandfather starting when he was just 3 years old. He graduated from the United States Military Academy at West Point and served in the U.S. Army for over 10 years. He later created the Big Game Hunting blog and the Big Game Hunting podcast as a resource to give average hunters the straight scoop to help them make the most of their time afield. John McAdams, welcome to the Wild Fishing Game Podcast.
Thanks a lot for having me. It's wonderful to be here.
Yeah, super excited. Like I mentioned earlier, I'm glad you reached out. It's been something I wanted to talk about for a long time, so this is like the perfect opportunity for us to dive into this. But first, like, can you tell us a little bit about your origin story, how you got into hunting, you know, your time in the Army, if you hunted there while you were out and about, and kind of what all that looked like?
Yeah, definitely. So I live out in East Texas now, and it's funny, I didn't grow up here. I grew up down in the Houston area, like we were talking about, but I grew up hunting out here. And so this is where most of my kind of formative hunting experiences were as a young man. Then I went to college, and I did a good deal of deer hunting when I was up in New York, up at West Point. There was some pretty good deer hunting up there. And when we were getting ready to graduate, they let you... Once you get assigned your branch, they put everyone from each branch in a room and you pick your duty assignment. It's called posting night. And so they have a big PowerPoint presentation set up with, okay, there's this many slots at Fort Lewis in Washington, this many spots in Germany, and the number one ranked guy in the room with the best grades gets to choose first, and they take it off of there, and it just kind of goes down the list. And it's like,
oh, wow. You know,
yes, it was quite an event for a bigger branch like mine. I branched armor. And so we knew what all the slots were going into this, and I knew where I stood in the branch, and I could kind of figure out, okay, you know, some of these are probably not going to be available, but I'll probably have most of these other ones. And so I was looking at things, and Fort Stewart, Georgia was one of the options that I was considering going to anyway. And so I was looking at the lifestyle there, and I was like, oh, man. They have a three-month-long deer season, and you can shoot 12 deer a year in Georgia. You can shoot two bucks and 10 does all season combined there. And hunt from October through the end of January. And then you can hunt hogs all year long. And I was like, man, this really sounds like my kind of place. And so that's where I went for my first duty assignment. I was there for for 3 years, did a lot of hunting there, spent a year in Iraq when I was stationed there, then went to Fort Benning for the career course, same deal there. It's also in Georgia, a little bit different terrain, but the same general idea, so I did a lot of hunting there. Then I went up to Fort Lewis, and I was ended up working on staff, and I was a cavalry troop commander there, deployed to Afghanistan, but hunting in Washington was also amazing, but it was a completely different experience from what I was used to in Texas, Georgia, New York. I did a little bit of hunting when I was at Fort Knox in Kentucky as well. Going from that Eastern mindset to the Western way of doing things, which kind of how they did it in Washington, was very completely different from what I was used to. You know, you pick the one season that you're going to hunt in, and you can shoot one deer. But you could also hunt bear and elk and things like that there that were very exotic species to me that had never gotten the chance to hunt before and that sort of thing. I got out of the Army there. My wife was still in the Army, though, and we got stationed at Fort Bliss, which is in El Paso, Texas. Mm-hmm. And it is in Texas, but it is barely in Texas, as the joke goes. It's much more aligned culturally, economically, all that stuff with New Mexico and Old Mexico than it is with the rest of Texas. But that actually gave me a good stepping stone to hunting New Mexico, Arizona, Colorado, mm-hmm. Wyoming when I was there. It was the same distance drive for me to go to from El Paso to Laramie, Wyoming, as it was for me to go to El Paso to Houston, Texas. So to give you an idea just how darn big Texas is, driving all the way across New Mexico, all the way across Colorado to get there. But so I had a lot of good years there. My wife got out of the Army. Last year, we moved back out to East Texas, and that's where I am now.
Nice. Nice. And how's the hunting these days there in East Texas?
Really good. I had a real good deer season out here. Hunted some property that I hunted on as a kid. I shot a deer on opening day. I helped my brother-in-law shoot his first deer this past November on opening day too. So it was really good. My son went out with me for the first time. So it was just all around really good. And the hog hunting there has been great as well this year too. So it's nice to kind of be back into that. The deer aren't real big here, but there's a lot of them, and yeah. And you know, it's real close to the house, and so it's hard to beat that.
Yeah, yeah, that convenience factor's there, and it makes it easy. Mm-hmm. So thinking through your travels and kind of where you've gone, so where do you settle in as far as like a favorite wild game?
Man, you know, I was thinking about that before we went on the show, and I've had some real good ones over the years. I've had the opportunity to hunt a lot of different stuff and eat a lot of really good game, but I'll tell you, I was in South Africa about 7 years ago, and I had kudu schnitzel when I was there, and it was just absolutely amazing. Kudu is really good, just kind of, you just cook it as a steak, and then you mm-hmm. get someone that really knows what they're doing to cook a little bit different dish like that, and that was just next level.
Man, that sounds delicious. And kudu, that's what are they, a deer, antelope? I forget.
So they're an antelope. They're about the size of an elk, so they're really big.
Okay. Yep. Yeah. Nice. Oh yeah, good schnitzel. I mean, you can't go wrong with schnitzel. Like anytime mm-hmm. you batter and fry something, it's pretty tasty. There's definitely the opportunity to try different things, but it's a classic go-to. We did at the pig camp I was talking about earlier. That was one of the featured meals we did, was like a pork schnitzel and like a German potato salad and a purple cabbage.
You're making my mouth water just thinking about it.
Well, that's it. You got to make sure you eat before the show. And I think yeah. I made that mistake today, so hopefully I don't end up too hungry after our conversations. So this is always a fun question Corey likes me to ask as we kind of work through the beginnings and get to know each other. What do you got in the freezer now, and what are you looking forward to cooking next?
So I have the remains of my deer from this past deer season, my whitetail, and then I got two different hogs in there as well. So I moved last year, so my hunting season, it wasn't super exotic last year, but this year I got a good one coming up. I'll be going, as long as I pull that tag, I'll be going to Colorado for pronghorn.
Nice.
And then also for bison, which should be really cool, and that's the thing I'm actually looking forward to the most. I'm driving there specifically to bring as much of that meat as I can back from that bison hunt.
Holy smokes, bison. And that's in Colorado?
Colorado, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Really? What part of the state are you doing the bison hunt at?
In the southern part of the state. It's a it's a private ranch I'll be hunting on. But it'll be cool. And then I also drew a late season elk tag in Arizona. So that's what I'll be doing at the end of November this year.
Nice. And for the antelope tag, are you hunting? So I'm guessing antelope eastern side of Colorado.
Yeah, south right really like south central. Not too far from Trinidad. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's a good spot for antelope down there. There's a ton. That's awesome. Yeah, I got out. So I've traditionally hunted Wyoming pretty exclusively for antelope for like the last 6-7 years. And then last year I moved out to Denver in July, and so I got out the first of archery season for antelope, and really just kind of like to get a bow in my hand and get moving around out on public land on the eastern side of the state, because they've got a over-the-counter antelope archery tag that's almost the entire eastern part of the state minus a couple units, and just tried to get out and explore. It was really good. Didn't end up taking an antelope, but I think this year, as a result of last year's mule deer season, I've got some good spots lined up that I'm like, all right, I've got my feet under me. And then I'm planning to head back up this year to Wyoming to do antelope again. But I tell you, when we talk about favorite game meats, antelope for me is like, it's at the top of the list. It has been for a while, and it still's like, it's got such a cool, unique flavor.
That is definitely true. You know, I had my first antelope actually on a hunt in Wyoming, and yeah, it was great. You know, you hear kind of like mule deer, you hear all sorts of stuff about it, but the mule deer and the antelope I've had have been, you know, really, really good. Not as good as that kudu, but still really darn good, man.
Well, see, and so I'll that's tell you,
I got a lot of respect for someone that can go out and consistently take an antelope with a bow, man. That is a tough hunt.
I won't say consistently. I've done that more rifle, but man, if I can get in tune with the way of the bow for antelope, I think it's interesting. You hear folks talk, they've got the decoys you put on the front of your bow that's like the antelope silhouette and all that stuff for archery, and then you hear people talk about like waving a white flag or t-shirt or game bag or whatever. I was really curious, and so last year we were in Wyoming, and we were hunting rifle antelope up there, and I had a herd like moving at a fair clip, you know, probably about 250 yards out. And I needed them. I didn't need them. I wanted them a little closer. And so I was like, hey, talking to my buddy, I was like, hey man, like reach in my pack over there, like pull out one of the game bags. And he's like, all right, I got the game bag. I was like, all right, take your rifle since like you're not shooting, and, like stick it on the end of your rifle and just like hold it up and wave it. And sure enough, like the herd came to a stop, and the lead doe in the herd like looked over, and then they started moving towards us, and they closed like 20, 30 yards. And I was like, all right, cool. Like they cleared the brush that I needed them to clear. And I was like, all right, cool. Good shot. But yeah, it, I was surprised, 'cause I've heard of people doing it, but you know, you hear a lot of things, and, it actually worked out, and I was really surprised and like, and happy. So I think this year I may try to get a little more creative when I'm out archery hunting to see if, you know, those types of things work.
Well, all right. Yeah. That sounds like a good plan.
Whether you're just looking to stay warm during a hunt or need maximum concealment, the clothing you wear can make or break a hunt. At MidwayUSA.com, we understand hunting clothing has come a long way, with more meticulously crafted camo patterns, advanced scent control technologies, and weatherproof options to withstand the elements. Hunters have to wait until their favorite season, but shouldn't wait on gear, which is why MidwayUSA offers super fast shipping. When you're ready for your next system, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
So As far as we talked a little bit about freezers, so any next meals you're looking forward to with the deer or pig?
You know, I took my hogs to a local meat processor, and they did a real good job of making me breakfast sausage and smoked sausage and, you know, pork chops and all that stuff. And, man, that sausage that they made was just next level. I don't know what the spice blend that they put in it mm-hmm. was, but, man, I love it. I wish I would have gotten more of it.
I do love a good sausage. There's like, especially there's a lot of like little places that have kind of their own seasoning blends, and you can really mm-hmm. doctor it up back. Speaking of antelope, we would travel a lot when I lived in Florida up to Wyoming. And so I would take my stuff to the processor because they could put a hard freeze on it. They get everything done in the time we were there, and I could easily like take it back on the plane with me. But they had a pretty good like breakfast blend that matched fairly well with the antelope. Like in the end, you needed to doctor it up a little bit with some salt, but it's always neat to find those like little places where people have their like niche spice blends and stuff like that. So mm-hmm. that's awesome. So let's talk a little bit about the big game hunting blog and podcast. So as you got out of the Army and started working on those projects, like what was kind of the main motivator behind it?
Sort of. Yeah, I actually started the blog in 2012 when I was deployed to Afghanistan. So I was still in the Army, and it was just something I did kind of in a little bit of free time that I had there as sure. a way to kind of something to do, stay sane while I was over there. And I would just kind of tell hunting stories and whatnot. And then I continued to do that. And then I transitioned a little bit into lessons learned and tips and tricks and things like that. And it just kind of snowballed on me over the years as I started to connect with people. My audience started to grow. And, you know, one of the things that I did a lot, I still do it, but I did it a lot more then, was I would spend a lot of time on hunting forums and whatnot. And mm-hmm. It was just disgusting to me on the forums and then on social media and whatnot how people treated each other. You'd have someone go in there and ask a legitimate question. They're a new person trying to get started on either just completely new to hunting or trying to learn something new. And people were just really rude to them. And people I saw were giving them probably bad advice too, things that I knew were wrong. Maybe they mm-hmm. were doing that with good intentions, but you know, you ask someone that doesn't know what they're talking about for advice and they give you bad advice, you know, that sort of thing. And so that sort of thing happened. And I was on the receiving end of that a couple of times, and it was really hard for me to kind of get started when I was in Washington, trying to learn hunting in a new place and new way of doing things and all that stuff. And I was like, you know, like that wasn't right how I was treated. I hate seeing other people get treated like that. I'm going to try and create a resource that'll be more helpful to other people and help them in some of those areas that I struggled. And so that's what I did with the blog. And then the podcast followed in 2019. So I'm actually about to do my 200th episode 3 years here.
Oh, nice. Congrats.
Real soon. Thank you.
That's awesome.
And so a lot of the same stuff that I talked about on the blog, I talk about on the podcast. And I bring on other people too that know a lot more about different things than I do. You know, I've talked with Trail Kreitzer from Go Hunt about the ins and outs of drawing tags in a lot of the Western states for people that's new to. Talked with Kevin Robertson about hunting in Africa, Joseph von Benedict about elk hunting, moose hunting, caribou hunting, that sort of thing. And it's just turned into a really cool deal I'm enjoying it, and I've been way more successful doing that than I ever dreamed that I would be. And I get to connect with interesting people like you doing that work as well.
Absolutely. I tell you, it's probably one of my favorite parts of the podcast world is just getting to chat with so many varying types of folks. And then you end up like creating a common relationship with them based off of that. And then it spurs into, you know, all kinds of other things. And it's a, mm-hmm. it's just fun.
Yeah, but I
totally relate to what you're saying sort of into the foundation of the big game hunting blog for you is just there's a ton of resources out there for folks. And then there's like a ton of negative interactions. And like, mm-hmm. I did the same thing. So traveling around a lot with the Coast Guard and going down to Florida and trying to kind of figure out the Florida scene there. Luckily I got plugged in with some good folks. when I moved here to Colorado, it was kind of the same thing. I was like, all right, I'll check out the Facebook groups. I'll check out the forums. Like, I'll poke around. I'll see what I can see. And, man, it's just I watch – and I've gotten to where, like, I'm almost, like, gun-shy to post or ask questions just because of sort of that negative interaction that you mentioned. So many folks that I see, unfortunately, will be like, hey, you know, I got a question. Like, I'm new to elk hunting, and I was just wondering, like, hey, what's a good spot? You know, I could go look for elk. I'm not necessarily looking for, like, your honey hole, but, you know, what's a common terrain you see elk? Like, what part of the mountain elevation? Like, people start getting, you know, in a little more detailed question. And I think from a person who appreciates, like, an educational perspective, it's like, hey, man, you know, this time of year, like, you could go check out this elevation area. You could, you know, look for dark timber or, you know, whatever draws they may be tucked into or blah, blah, blah. But you'll just hear people, it's like, go Google it or, you know, get out and go find it yourself. You know, just like tons and tons of negative interaction. I'm like, come on, guys. Like, in the hunting community, is that what we really want? Is that the way we want to? Like, this person, you know, I'm sure they would appreciate if you're like, yeah, like, here, let me drop you a pin in Onyx and, like, go here and check out this spot. But, you know, one, elk are super dynamic and they're all over the place, you know, when it comes to elevation and habitat and stuff like that. But two, it's just like, this person's just looking for a little bit of advice. And I don't know. It doesn't sit well with me. So I very much appreciate when I hear about folks like you that are like, hey, I really wanted to put this information out there because I went through this experience and now I don't want people to have to go through this experience. So for that, I say thanks because it's awesome. And then I was poking around quite a bit on your site over last week and then this week and two. And a lot of conversations around ammo and firearms mm-hmm. and caliber. So how did you, as you kind of began your journey with the blog and the podcast, how did you kind of settle in with those topic choices?
You know, that was a combination of stuff that I found was very interesting myself. Mm-hmm. I always enjoyed reading about, you know, various different cartridges and what they're good for and, you know, the cartridge development over the years and how different things kind of popped up and that and all that sort of thing. And at the same time, that was also something that really seemed to resonate with people that were reading my blog. I really flailed around there for a little bit, trying to find something that I enjoyed, that I was good at, and that people also wanted to read. And you'd normally get like two out of those three things there. And then I kind of stumbled onto that one. And that really, I found that that was like an itch that really needed to be scratched. Because you going back to the forums and the Facebook groups and all that stuff, you know, you go into one of these and you, right, we've all seen it, right? Someone posts in there, hey, is the 300 Win Mag good for elk? Or is the 6.5 Creedmoor good for elk? You know, and then just everyone just pounding on this guy from all sides. Use the search function. That cartridge sucks. Use this one instead. Blah, 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 blah. And people are fighting with each other in the comments about my cartridge is better than yours. And it was very hard to find just a kind of a straight, no baloney. You compare these two cartridges. This is what this one's good for. This is what that one's good for. Here's how they're the same. Here's how they're different. And that's really where I made my money and continued to really, really kind of struck gold there with the blog. And a lot of the stuff on the podcast is about that. And some of my most successful blog articles have been on different cartridge comparisons.
Nice. Yeah. I see you got some good, there's definitely, in just kind of perusing the most recent post here. So 6.8 Western versus 6.5 Creedmoor versus 270 WSM, like review and comparison, best 6.5 Creedmoor rifles for hunting for 2022, like pretty comprehensive stuff. And when you go into it, like in more detail, I mean, some solid research and solid presentation here on all these. I mean, just looking at the 6.5 here, like you got a good gambit of recommendations as far as various styles of rifle and, you know, mm-hmm. what you recommend, which is pretty good. I think this is, it's like a honest, like no BS recommendation.
Well, I appreciate that. That's what I'm trying to provide for people. And like I said, it's something that I'm interested in, and it was something people wanted to learn more about. So I was happy mm-hmm. to provide it.
So where do you settle whenever we're talking about as far as like calibers? What do you consider? So thinking through, we'll talk East Texas, whitetail, wild pig. Where's your gauge, or where do you like most?
You know, so like out here for those animals that you're talking about, you know, there's a lot of stuff that will work, and it's a matter of what else you want to do. Because when mm-hmm. I lived in El Paso, that was much more open country, longer shots were more common, and so I hunted almost exclusively with a 300 Win Mag out there, and that was great for everything that I needed to hunt. And you could absolutely hunt with a 300 Win Mag in East Texas, but you know, the ammo's more expensive, it recoils more, and as we'll talk more in a minute, you're running the risk of more meat damage than is necessary with it. And so for that reason, I haven't used it so much out here, and so I've stepped down to a 308, which is works great. A 6.5 Creedmoor, honestly, this is perfect for a 6.5 Creedmoor out here for those animals and for the shorter range situations like this. That is what I use. 30-06 is great. 243, 7mm 08, stuff in that range, I think, is just absolutely ideal for, you know, say 200 yards and in deer and hogs like I'm dealing with here.
And so what do you, whenever you're transitioning out west more, say you're, I wouldn't say antelope and elk because those are two varying like species, but let's say antelope. Like you could definitely get some longer shots at antelope and mm-hmm. you know, smaller bodied animal, more chance for meat loss. Where are your thoughts there?
You know, I think that's one of those areas where the 6.5 Creedmoor is still really good for that sort of thing. The 6.5 mm-hmm. PRC, you know, you get a little bit more velocity with that same bullet, and so it would work also pretty good. I have not decided what I'm going to use on my antelope hunt this fall. My two previous antelope, I both shot with a 300 Win Mag. Worked great with both of them. Maybe the 6.5 Creedmoor this fall. I have a 27 Nosler that I'm going to use. It's just a matter of what I'm going to use it on. That's not necessarily something I'd recommend for the run-of-the-mill guy. That's a more specialized cartridge, though.
Sure.
But really, you know, maybe the kind of 270 is almost perfect for that sort of hunting, for the smaller-ish animals like that, deer, antelope at longer range. So yeah, kind of, that's one of those things too, where if you got a 30-06, you could do just about all of this stuff really well. And this is a debate that we're constantly having on my podcast and in my articles and that sort of thing. So we could talk about this for about 3 hours tonight if you wanted to.
That's fair. Yep. Totally agree. I've settled. I've been using for a while. I picked up a 308. A number of years ago, and that's just kind of what I've been rolling with. It's suited well. I think this year I may step it up and go. I've been strongly looking into the 6.5, but I haven't quite made up my mind yet for kind of a good all around gun. But we'll
I love the 308. I killed my first couple deer with it, and then like I said, I got away from it for a while, and I thought about selling that rifle, and I didn't, and I'm glad I held on to it, and I still have it here. My brother-in-law shot his deer with it this past year. And I've done, you know, a bit of hunting with it myself, and ammo is really easy to get for it these mm-hmm. days and stuff. And so, I think, it works great for a lot of things. I personally wouldn't take it elk hunting. If you're going to take it elk hunting, I think it's real good at, you know, say inside 200-300 yards, mm-hmm. Be careful with it, on a big animal past that. But other than that, a 308 is awesome.
Oh yeah, for mm-hmm. sure. So let's move into our meat saving shot placement. Gosh, that's a mouthful. Need to figure out a way to rephrase that. But let's talk about and we'll touch base a little more on caliber and cartridge ammo type. But as far as shot placement, and when we talked about this initially, and you're like, hey, let's chat about this, and I latched onto it. I kind of want to pick your brain and pretend that I know nothing. So why is shot placement when you're talking about meat yield so important?
So that's kind of a two factors that we're dealing with here. First, we want to have good shot placement so that we quickly and cleanly kill the animal. We don't want it to run a long way and maybe lose it, or take a long time to find it. That runs the risk of meat loss due to spoilage, or just flat out losing the entire animal that way. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, it's kind of linked to this. But if you don't hit the animal well, let's say you hit the vitals and you also hit the guts of it as well. You get a lot of that contamination in that way in it too. And so even if the animal doesn't go very far, it can make a mess out of the inside of the animal and potentially ruin some meat. And at the same time, this is something I've dealt with. I'll actually share a story with you here in a minute talking about how this can go wrong. But you can very quickly and cleanly kill an animal, have it drop right in its tracks, very easy to find, and ruin a ton of meat on it from damage caused by the bullet hitting the animal. That is just absolutely horrific, and we'll go into the details on this. But that is very frustrating when that happens. I shot a mule deer in New Mexico a couple years ago with my 300 Win Mag, using a light, very fast bullet, and he was standing slightly quartering to me, almost broadside, but not quite. And I did not have a super steady rest. I pulled my shot a little bit when I squeezed the trigger, and I hit him straight through both shoulders, and he just dropped in his tracks. And my bullet hit his near side shoulder blade and just shattered that shoulder blade, went everywhere. And then the bullet and the fragments from that shoulder blade destroyed that shoulder and most of the one on the other side. And so he was easy to find, did not hit the guts on him, and you can't ask for a faster kill than that. But I lost almost all the meat on both shoulders. I was able to salvage some of it, but you know, it was one of these things that was not where I was aiming to kill him or to hit him, but it made a mess. And I was like, golly, that was a good example. My first experience of the 300 Win Mag ruining a bunch of meat like that. And so there's really four factors that go into meat loss or meat preservation, however you want to look at it. The first is where the bullet actually hits. And the second is the bullet velocity. And related to the bullet velocity is the bullet weight and bullet construction, and then what the bullet is made out of. And so we'll talk about all these here in a second. But when a bullet hits an animal, especially if it is an expanding type bullet like almost all hunters use these days, it's going to mushroom and or fragment depending on the type of bullet that you're using here. And if it's, say, a lead core bullet that fragments, you're going to have tiny pieces of the bullet that kind of go out and radiate in all directions as it passes through the animal, while the front of that bullet mushrooms and expands in size. And it's going to transfer energy to the animal and make a permanent wound cavity, and depending on how fast it's going, a temporary wound cavity as well. That permanent wound cavity is everything that actually touches the bullet itself. So as it gets bigger, say you shoot with a 30 caliber bullet that expands to twice its diameter, you're going to have a 0.6 inch or approximately a projectile going through this animal that's destroying everything that it touches, plus everything, you know, depending how fast it's going, the bullet construction, that sort of thing, a little bit bigger around that area as well. And then that is just going to be totally destroyed, whatever it hits. The things that come off from the sides of it are going to cause even more damage to the animal as well. You're going to have a lot of vascular and tissue damage and whatnot. And that can be more or less bad depending how fast the bullet's going and the construction of the bullet. But bottom line is you hit it, it's going to destroy some meat exactly where it hits. And then depending on other factors, some more meat, in that same area. And it can be a little bit or it can be a lot. The 300 Win Mag is a very high velocity cartridge. You know, with a 150 grain bullet, you're going to have a muzzle velocity like 3,200 feet per second, which is pretty darn fast. It'll slow down a little bit, you know, before it gets to the animal. How much will depend on a couple different factors. But you shoot a white-tailed deer at 50 yards with a 150 grain bullet from a 300 Win Mag, it's going to be a very high velocity impact. Now it's going to cause all this damage where it hits. And this is why your shot placement is so important. if it hits in an area like the shoulder itself, like the muscle on the shoulder where there's a lot of meat, there's going to be the potential for a lot of meat damage there. But if you shift that point of impact back a tiny bit and it hits maybe right behind the shoulder and just goes through the ribs, hits the lungs, it's going to be a whole different story. You're going to have a potential for a very quick kill. You know, deer may run 50 yards, something like that. And you'll lose some of the rib meat, but there's not nearly as much meat on the ribs as there is on the shoulder of a deer. Mm-hmm. And so there's just less potential for loss. If you want to get really bad with it, shoot the deer through both hips and you'll make a mess of the guts on the inside of it. Ooh, and then shoot straight through the hams of it. And, you know, it's just the worst possible thing that you could imagine. Now, like I said, though, you don't want to get too clever with this. If you hit a tiny bit behind the shoulder, you hit the lungs, you miss the paunch, and it's great. But if you hit too far back, then you have the chance of getting some meat contamination there. And if you hit even farther back, the animal may run farther, and it's harder to find, and you may lose it. There's other meat-saving shots that you can go for as well, like shooting the brain and or the neck of the animal. But that's also dicey because it's a smaller target, and especially on something like a deer, it's always moving too. You know what I mean? Right? A deer, it'll stand there and it'll eat for a second, then it'll pop its head up and look around and then put its head back down for a second and eat and that sort of thing. And so you don't have a big window if you're going to be trying to shoot a deer in the head. And that's an area where if you do it right, it drops in its tracks, you lose very little meat. But if you screw it up, it's really easy to wound and lose that deer as well. But that's one of those things that with a, say like a feral hog, it's a much more doable shot with them. It's harder than a heart and lung shot with them, but a spine or a brain shot is easier, I think, on a hog. And my experience doing it, because it's not moving around as much.
That's what we were teaching at the pig camp is like shot placement for best meat yield on a hog is like the ear, mm-hmm. like aim straight for the ear. And we did like a best shot competition for everybody that was bringing their hogs in and kind of evaluate it. And like, it was very impressive to see someone put like, I think it was like a 60 or 70 yard shot, like literally pig right through the ear. And it was their first time shooting a rifle, you know, outside the range, first time shooting an animal, without, you know, with a rifle. And I was like, wow, like that's literally what we taught you to do. And you did it. And like the pig just dropped. And, but what I found is like I was doing the same when we were out. So we went out a couple days before to get like camp meat and stuff like that. And man, those pigs are fidgety. Like talk about deer with like big swing up and down. It's just like a pig's kind of always just like bouncing around, moving, eating, moving, shifting right, shifting left. And I was just like, man, this is very frustrating. And I ended up just taking a shot, you know, on the lungs, but it is though. If you can get it, like you mentioned, on a pig, I think it's a great shot.
Mm-hmm. Now, pigs are challenging because they got such a giant stomach and digestive tract that their guts go a little bit farther forward into their body than is the case with, say, a deer. So you could shoot a little bit behind the shoulder on a hog and still get the lungs and whatnot, but you just have a little bit less margin of error there than you do with a deer or with other animals.
We did experience that when some folks brought in and they had made those shots, like they definitely hit some organs inside there, and there was a little bit, I wouldn't say contamination, because we were getting to them pretty quickly and cleaned out and hung up, but you know, you could tell like you were dealing with some movements of the internal fluids from the organs inside that body cavity.
Mm-hmm. And so, like I said, it's one of these things where you're trying to walk a tightrope here, and shot placement is important. But as we'll talk about here in a second, I grew up, my dad really liked a shoulder shot. I don't want to mess around with shooting it too far back. I want to break this deer down. I don't want it to run very far. I'll deal with a little bit of meat loss from that. And he wasn't wrong in doing that. His mindset in doing that was also informed by the cartridges that he used. He really liked stuff like the .38-55 and the .45-70 and things like that. bigger bore, but oftentimes slower cartridges like that. Like, I mean, at the 4570 we're shooting like a 300 or 400 gram bullet at like 1600 feet per second, you know, maybe 1700 or 1800, but not very fast at all. Very big difference from, say, a 300 Win Mag where you're going approaching 2,000-3,000 feet per second in some cases. Meat loss really starts to kick up on an animal when you have impact velocities, say, above 2,600 feet per second. So that is why cartridges like the 30-30 and the 45-70, and say throw in like the 35 Remington in there as well, that are all lower velocity cartridges like that, people will joke that you can, quote unquote, eat right up to the hole with them. And that's not that much of an exaggeration. You shoot a deer straight through the shoulder with like a 30-30 with a 170 grain bullet. That bullet only has a muzzle velocity of 2,200, maybe 2,300 feet per second. And so it's going to slow down a little bit when it reaches that deer, but it'll still be going really slow. And it'll punch a hole straight through, and it'll make a permanent wound cavity that's big enough to kill it. You make a good shot, it's not going to go very far, and then it's not going to just be throwing fragments everywhere inside the body and making a giant bloodshot ring around where that bullet hits and that sort of thing. And so if you're a guy like my dad that's hunting at 50 to 100 yards that likes those lower velocity cartridges, you can definitely do that, and the consequences for doing so, shooting straight through the shoulder, you know, aren't very bad at all.
I think that was – so I was raised with 30-30. I still have it. Marlin 30-30, arguably probably one of the most popular deer rifles for a very, very long time. Marlin
336. There you go, man.
Yep. You know, punching through a deer was like nothing. I remember my first deer I shot was like a doe. And same exact scenario, like shot it through the shoulder, broke the right shoulder bone, or not shoulder bone, gosh, it's terrible anatomy. Busted the bone in the right shoulder, busted the bone in the left shoulder. And then, you know, the traumatic thing for like 9-year-old Justin was like this deer, you know, flailing limbs, ran like 60 yards and jumped a barbed wire fence. But then it fell over and it was, you know, it was done. But that caliber got it done. And I think, you know, in reflecting back, like the meat yield on that was, you know, not as affected by that shot compared to, like, I think about seeing examples of like a higher velocity bullet going through meat and you're just like, holy smokes, like this is a mess. Mm-hmm. Like there's a lot of, you know, what people will say trauma or damage to the meat, and it's just like, well, that explains a lot of it. So
I should have taken a picture of the shoulders of that mule deer when I shot it with the 300 Win Mag. It would have made quite the demonstration on this, and maybe put that right up next to a picture of one shot with a 30-30 or 45-70, something like that. There are some other things that you can do, though. You know, say if you've got say like the 30-30 is great up close. You know, 150 yards and in, wonderful cartridge, great for out east. But yeah, you know, a lot of parts of Colorado, you know, other places out west, you know, it's very challenging to get that close to an animal, and it's, you're pushing the limits with a cartridge like that. So if you wanted to hunt with a 30-06, a 300, a 308, 270, whatever, one of the things you can do to reduce the chances of really messing up a ton of meat is to use a heavier bullet weight in whatever cartridge you're using. Say 150 grain bullet in your 270 instead of a 130, or 180 grain bullet in your 308 instead of 150, that sort of thing. It'll, that bullet's probably going to have a little bit higher BC than that lighter bullet, but it's going to have a lower velocity as well.
So when you say BC, sorry, what do you mean? What
ballistic
do you mean?
Coefficient. So it's going to be a little bit more aerodynamic than that lighter bullet for the same cartridge, all other things being equal, of course. But the main thing is it's going to be a little bit lower velocity. So like you go with a 30-06, 150 grain bullet, you're going to be pushing 3,000 feet per second with it. You bump up to 180 grain bullet, that's going to be 2,700 feet per second. So that's a 300 foot per second difference there. And so by the time that bullet makes it out to, say, 100 or 200 yards, it'll have slowed down, and you drill an animal right through the shoulder, it's not going to be nearly as bad as it would have if it was a 150 grain bullet, you know, for instance, something like that. At the same time, a tougher bullet is going to do less damage than a lighter bullet. Say compare like a say a Hornady SST, something like that. It's very light, is going to expand very well. Lightly constructed, it's going to expand very rapidly. Compare that to, say, a Nosler Partition or a Nosler Acubond. They'll still expand, but they're not going to go completely to pieces, that sort of thing. That's another thing you can do to reduce meat loss. The other thing that you can do is to use a non-lead bullet, like a Barnes bullet, Hornady CX, Nosler E-Tip, something like that. Those bullets are going to retain all their weight, and they're still going to expand really well, but they're going to retain all their weight, so they're going to penetrate really well also. But at the same time, since they're retaining all their weight and they are lead-free, they're not going to be shooting lead fragments off to the sides as it expands. And so in my experience, I've killed a lot of animals with lead-free bullets. I've used almost all of them. And I'm trying to use the new Winchester copper bullet this year, and that'll be the last one that I haven't used. But they've all been extremely effective at killing game quickly without having any lead contamination in the animal at all. Sometimes people that means a lot to, some people it doesn't. You know, I like it. Like I said, it works really well for me. And at the same time, you're not going to have all those other fragments kind of coming off of it to add to that bloodshot side of things. The downside of all these things I just told you is that they can, you're potentially losing a tiny bit of capability with the killing ability of the round. You shoot, say a really light, really fast, really lightly constructed bullet into a whitetail deer, with it, it's going to expand very rapidly. You're going to have a lot of energy transfer, do a lot of damage, that sort of thing. But it also has the potential to make a mess. These, you're going to have a little bit less energy transfer for the most part. I'm talking in generalities. There's exceptions to everything. But you slow the bullet down, you have your bullet, tougher bullet, and or a lead-free bullet. It's going to have a little bit less energy transfer. And so you might, you know, run the risk of, say, your margin error is a tiny bit less. But if you make good shot placement on it, you're still going to kill the animal quickly and effectively and cleanly. And at the same time, make less of a mess out of it. You know, I keep having to do all these caveats and all that stuff, but you're kind of walking a tightrope with a lot of this stuff. You want to do enough damage to kill it quickly, but, you know, what also kills it quickly is shooting it with a cannon and then blows it all to pieces. But that's not good for your meat loss at all, is it?
You know, it's interesting because it just scheduled today. So our next podcast episode that we'll be doing is with some folks from the non-lead hunting, North American non-lead partnership. So we're going to be talking a lot about the sort of non-lead movement and we spun it very, effects on animals and scavengers and things like that, but also too, like from the shot perspective and also from the food perspective. And I don't know, there's not a lot of research out there on sort of like the contamination piece right or left, but I think it's very interesting that you brought it up and I've been trying to do more to sort of look into the world of non-lead to see, you know, and I think it's, you know, this conversation has definitely motivated me to lean in a little more too as we talk about reducing meat loss. So it's good. That's good. That's good thoughts.
Yeah, definitely. And it's one of these things that it's a controversial topic. You know, the thing that makes me the most upset about things like that are going on is, say, states like California that mandate you have to use lead-free ammunition. That is a situation where I use it a lot anyway. And so in practical terms, if I were living and hunting in California, it probably wouldn't make that much of a difference. But just because you're making me do it, it kind of makes me mad and makes me want to fight it a little bit. So I understand people that feel that way as well. But like I said, I've got a lot of experience using those bullets, and they've worked really well for me, you know, on everything from tiny antelope in Africa, deer, bear, elk, antelope, even Cape Buffalo and stuff in Africa. I mean, I've shot, you know, from the smallest to some of the biggest animals with it, and it's done really, really well. And it's really, those, say like the Barnes bullet is kind of the gold standard for hunting almost all the game in Africa because it works so darn well. There were problems with it.
They were one of the first ones that came out of the gate with like a full, non-lead lineup.
Yeah, definitely. Barnes originally designed their bullets, kind of want to say like in the 1980s, specifically for hunting in Africa. And then he broadened his appeal a little bit and made a little bit less specialized of a bullet and started appealing to a more a general hunting audience and adjusted the design of the bullet as well. And, you know, 30 years ago, there were problems with it, maybe with accuracy and maybe not expanding sometimes and things like that. But they've worked a lot of those kinks out with it. And, you know, like I said, I've shot all different kinds of those bullets in my rifles and they've shot well and they've performed really well on game for me.
We had so it was a number of years ago. So a guy I hunt a lot with, his name's AJ, and he's been on the podcast. He's written a ton for us. But he and I were up in the Eastern Sierras in California, in, let's say 2015, and he was hunting. Let's see, 25-06, I think, with a Barnes cartridges, and we were up there hunting mule deer. Very like, it's an X zone tag, it takes a few points to draw. Drew it, like he made probably 150-200 yard shot on this mule deer. We both saw it, we saw the impact, we saw it fall, we saw it get back up, it turned broadside, I saw like the exit wound, and then it like kind of started up the side of this mountain, and I had like framed out what was where we thought the deer was going to kind of come out of the brush and all that. Never appeared, and we went over and tried to track it, and very interesting. No blood splatter, no hair, no meat particles, nothing. It's as though the mountain like opened up and swallowed this deer.
Jeez.
So we went and had a conversation. So I think it was a couple weeks later, we traveled up to Wyoming and we passed, we were going to be passing through the Barnes factory, like on our way, like along the highway. And so he reached out because in that we had found, there was a mismatched bullet in the box, of the shells that he had. And so we reached out to those folks and we're like, hey, there's a mismatch for this bullet, like it was like a 308 bullet and is 25-06 or like some,
oh my goodness.
Some like kind of bad mistake. And they
some
were like, oh
obvious
my
mistake too. Yeah. Like, yeah.
Yeah. So they're like, oh my gosh, like we need the lot number. Where'd you buy it? Like all this stuff. So it turned into a big conversation. They were very, very thorough, but we stopped by up there and like, we were kind of telling the story and they're like, yeah, we've been really working on that particular caliber to, you know, make improvements to it. And it was just very interesting to kind of understand their story and like the R&D aspect of it and hearing some examples. But not to say that copper's the be all end all, because it certainly has its challenges, as you mentioned, as far as like energy transfer and things like that. So it's just one example that comes to mind from my experiences, but definitely some benefits to it too.
Yeah, and definitely. You know, and those are the downsides of it, right? The bullet tends to need a little bit more velocity to expand properly than, say, like a real soft lead core bullet. And so there are circumstances where you can, and I've actually, this has never happened to me, but I've known guys this has happened to, where they're out hunting, get a good shot on an animal, make a really good hit on it, and but it's kind of right at, say, like what their max effective range was, say, you know, sure, 400-500 yards, something like that. So it's a long-ish shot, but they make a good shot and the bullet just kind of pencils right through and doesn't expand because it wasn't going fast enough to really expand well.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if that animal had been 50 yards closer, you know, that velocity might have been high enough where it would have expanded a little bit better and might have done a little bit more damage. I don't know that I've known anyone that's lost an animal to have that happening, but you know, I've known guys that it was a longer tracking job, or they had to shoot it again when they wouldn't have probably had to do that otherwise. Things like that.
Sure. So let's shift gears a little bit because unfortunately we're running out of time. I do want to talk a little bit about your ebook that you put together. So the Insider's Guide to Selecting the Best Caliber for Hunting Almost Anything. So could you kind of like paint the picture, what that looked like, without giving too many details, because I want folks to go over to your website and get that book.
Definitely, right. So these conversations that I'm having with you, I get people want to hear about it on the podcast. People email me, oh, I'm starting hunting. What caliber should I get?
Mm-hmm.
Well, and the answer is, well, it depends. right? Mm-hmm. What are you hunting? Where are you hunting? What is your experience? All of this sort of thing. So that ebook is a guide to, say, like a good framework for hunting almost anything from birds and small game all the way up to Cape Buffalo and everything in between. These are the most popular and the most effective cartridges for these different hunting situations. These are the pros and cons of them. These are some of the most effective loads that I recommend for these cartridges for hunting these animals. And that's kind of just like a good place to get started with a lot of this stuff. And, you know, a lot of the, I won't go into any more detail on that and to what is exactly in it. You'll have to check out the ebook, which is free to learn more about it. But that kind of gets you started down the path of, okay, Now that you're thinking about that, now we can maybe talk more in detail about specific rifles and the specific hunting situations and things like that to really get you dialed in. Because this is one of those things like we even talked about on the podcast. What works great for me hunting whitetail deer in East Texas is very different from what I would consider ideal for hunting elk in Arizona.
Sure.
And there are things that will work well for both of those things, but things that work great for one of them, there's going to be downsides to using on the other one, potentially, depending on what it is. And so if you get a good mismatch on that stuff, taking a 30-30 on your elk hunt or taking a 300 Win Mag and shooting a whitetail deer with it at 50 yards, you can run into problems with either ruining a ton of meat on the animal or missing it or wounding it, losing it, that sort of thing.
Well, that's fair. So that's good. Well, thanks for providing that. I actually just signed up for it. So I'm excited to give it a read and dive in a little bit. Where can folks go? What's your website there? What's the best way for people to get access to your resources and subscribe to the podcast and connect with you maybe on social media?
Yep. So go to thebiggamehuntingblog.com. They'll take you to the homepage of my blog. You can sign up there to get the free ebook. And there's also a tab at the top of the page you can click to go to the podcast. My podcast is The Big Game Hunting Podcast, just like the blog, Big Game Hunting Blog, Big Game Hunting Podcast. I'm on all the normal podcast places as well, but you can get to me through the blog. Sign up for the ebook. When you sign up for the ebook, that'll also put you on my email list. I send out an email every weekday talking about interesting hunting stories, lessons I've learned along the years that are very engaging and entertaining, that sort of thing. And if you don't like it, you can always unsubscribe if you want. But I get a lot of compliments on people that find that stuff very entertaining. Like I said, so check it out. TheBigGameHuntingBlog.com.
Awesome. Awesome. And are you on social media, Instagram, Facebook, anywhere?
Yeah, definitely. Right. So I'm on Facebook at The Big Game Hunting Blog. Instagram, I'm at TheBigGameHunter_.
Got it. Sweet. Well, I definitely encourage everybody to go connect with John on those locations there. Subscribe to the ebook or get the ebook, which will let you subscribe to the email list. Excited to see a lot of useful information come through. Outside of that, so since we're kind of winding down, I like to give everybody sort of a moment for a last thought, concept, idea, question, whatever you got on your mind to share with the audience. So please fire away. If not, no big deal.
Sure. So the big thing to keep in mind when you're trying to save meat on an animal is the first thing you want to do is quickly and cleanly kill that animal. So like I said, don't try and get too clever with your shot placement or anything like that. If it's a situation where it's a little bit dicey, maybe you pass on the shot, or maybe you just take the more sure shot through the shoulder if that's what you got to do. Say if it's a quartering to your shot, something like that, and just deal with a little bit more meat loss and quickly and cleanly kill that animal so you're not mm-hmm. making a mess out of it, having to find it or lose it or things like that. But if you want to try and really fine-tune things, try and aim for a shot that misses the shoulder but still hits the vitals, say like on a quartering shot, maybe a little bit behind the shoulder, a little bit in front of the shoulder, depending on the angle. Higher bullet weights, or heavier bullet weights, lower velocities, and tougher bullets, and potentially lead-free bullets are all kind of a combination that you can use to stack the deck a little bit more in favor of that outcome.
Awesome, man. What a multitude of information. I appreciate you sharing all of it with us. I think it lets me be a little better prepared as I start trying to fine tune some hunting plans this year, and even before I head out to the range and start dialing in a little bit and thinking about running shots through my mind and shot placement and just like walking through everywhere. I think talking about sort of calibers and velocity and all those other factors are going to play in a lot, because you even got me thinking when you were talking about bullet weight, like a 150 versus 165 as far as like what I'm using, and I'm like, huh, so that's gonna make a difference. Totally different idea and concept in my head than what I thought it was. So thanks for confirming that. No, it's really useful, and I hope that everybody out there found this conversation really useful. I know a ton of great information, so as I encourage you, please go connect with John on all those various mediums, and look forward to hearing feedback from everybody. If you've got any good stories as a result from this, maybe you changed caliber, maybe you changed ammunition, anything like that. Love to hear that feedback. Please feel free to share it with us. And thanks everybody for listening. All these show notes will include the links to some of the details we talked about, access to John's website, his podcast, all that stuff. We'll put it in the show notes there. And then after you give him a follow over on social media, make sure you're following Harvest of Nature so you can stay on top of everything that we got going on there. Tons and tons of happenings this summer. And we want to make sure you're included in that. So, and then lastly, whatever podcast platform you're listening to, please punch that 5-star button, leave us a review, tell us what we're doing wrong, or, tell us what we're doing right. Thanks, everybody. Have a good night.
To go like just full-blown redneck on these fish.
This is like high-tech cane pole fishing right here.
From the white sandy beaches to the crystal blue waters, enjoy the best fishing Panama City Beach has to offer during Chasing the Sun, Sundays at 9:30 a.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment. On Mondays, head offshore with Captain Scott Walker and Steve Roger for breathtaking deep-sea adventures.
Coming to me.
Double. He's jumping.
Oh!
Look at that belly.
Don't miss Mondays with Into the Blue, brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern.
Tell a few fish stories along the way.
On Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.